So you're very aware of your impacts on the planet. You drive a fuel-efficient vehicle when you drive. You recycle constantly and avoid buying products with scads of non-biodegradable packaging materials. In general, you try to keep your footprint on the earth small. But have you thought about your funeral? A heavy wooden metal casket in a plastic-lined grave uses a lot of materials that will last a very long time. And there are green alternatives, many of them. Elizabeth Fournier calls herself the Green Reaper. She's the author of the Green Burial Guidebook, everything you need to plan an affordable, environmentally friendly burial. Elizabeth Fournier owns and operates Cornerstone Funeral Services in Boring, Oregon. That really is the name of the town. It's a family name. Elizabeth also sits on the boards of the Green Burial Council and the North American Natural Burial. She wrote a previous book, The Green Reaper, Memoirs of an Eco-Mortician. Elizabeth Fournier, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
I'm thrilled to be here. I love this topic. I eat it and I breathe it. So happy to share all the knowledge.
It does seem to permeate your psyche by what you tell us in the book. What got you into this line of work?
I started as an undertaker really, really young, and I knew at age 13 it was what I wanted to do. And it's just because when I was very small, everyone in my house died. And I don't mean that in a really dramatic fashion. There wasn't a fire or a plague. I just had my mother and my grandparents who live with us all die in a very short period of time. So the Fournier family spent much more time in caskets than they actually did. Otherwise, it just became a very natural thing to go to the funeral home, to have a rosary, to have a funeral, to have a burial. And I started spending time processing all of this by playing in my sandbox and lining up cars. And kids at school would, of course, come to me as the person who maybe would have some knowledge about death and dying, the afterlife, how to deal with this. So it just became my calling at a very, very young age.
You were not green at first, is that right?
I say it again.
Were you doing green funerals right off the bat, or is that something you moved into?
No, I started in the funeral industry in the 90s, and that was something that we weren't really doing as a society really anywhere in the United States. It was happening in England, but it hadn't quite moved over to our side of the pond yet.
So if Cornerstone is the first green funeral home in Greater Portland, does that mean that the growth of green funerals is relatively modest?
Yeah, I would say it's moving slowly, but baby boomers are now the people who are starting to slough off their mortal coil and move on, and they're the ones who are really looking to find out more information. I mean, they are the ones who kind of started with the bottle bill and the recycling and all, and they're the ones who are thinking that they're walking a green talk, so they're sort of ready to go out green as well.
Do you have full training in all the aspects of being a funeral director, so you're versed in the green and the non-green side?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a standard mortician. I was trained with regular funeral practices. I've done my apprenticeships in all the funeral homes I've worked at and cemeteries I've worked at have all been pretty standard modern burial practices. But over time, I really found this is really even doubly more of my calling and what I wanted to do. I found out that this was out there. It was something that was legal. It was something many people didn't know about. So I really became an advocate for people locally. And I do find that this is a movement which is catching on because there are a whole bunch of us across the states who are passionate about it and are starting to really do a lot of eco-education.
You mentioned legal, and I do want to get into the ordinances and things that might restrict green funerals, but I also want to talk about accreditation because I have to wonder if the various accrediting boards were maybe slow to come around making green funerals an official thing within the industry.
Oregon is governed by an Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. They hold all of our licenses if you have a facility or if you have a working license, being an embalmer, a funeral director, a cremator. So we follow their rules and regulations. They do govern things because the idea of just burying somebody out in the woods and nobody knowing about it, of course, is a no-no and doesn't work. And they don't want everything to be incredibly loose and have things untracked. But they're also realizing that there's a lot of things that they, don't completely regulate, such as if you own private land and you're in a rural area in your county, the Planning and Zoning Board says that burial will be okay. Then the Mortuary Board says, well, as long as you put private residence and put the address on the burial permit, that's good enough.
Okay, well, we'll research further in a little while about you know where people can be interred. I have to wonder though. I mean, we're talking about the supply side mostly up to this point. Let me come to the demand side and ask about if one of the obstacles to the embracing of green funerals is that people don't want to think about any kinds of funerals until they absolutely have to.
Yeah, that's right. I find that when parents come to see me, they'll often say, "My kids don't know I'm coming in to talk to you." My kids, of course, don't want to consider the fact that I'm going to die someday. And I think that's with a lot of things. There's even a lot of couples who don't talk to each other about what possibly might happen in the future. But when it does come to the concept of, okay, if you want a green burial, the first thing I tell people is you need to find out where do you plan to be buried. That's the first choice. Which cemetery do you plan to purchase a space in, or which address on private land do you plan to use?
So the cemeteries themselves, you describe modern American cemeteries as increasingly toxic places. Toxic from what?
Well, if we're buried traditionally, most likely you're going to be an embalmed body. So that embalming fluid, the formaldehyde, and all of that leaches into the soil, gets down lower into the waterways. If you are buried modernly, you probably are in a metal casket, or you're going to be in a wood casket, which probably is lacquered and has toxic glue, also has hardware on it. Those things don't biodegrade, and those are things that just sort of sit there. You're also going to be buried surrounded in a steel or a concrete burial vault. And again, those are things that are man-made that we're putting directly into the earth, which really do nothing but sit there. Not probably the best way to move on with our ecosystem.
Okay, so a lot of things that were sticking in the ground that they're going to be there for a while, and potentially in the case of the formaldehyde, has it been proven to be a carcinogen?
It is. Yeah, it is. There's many embalmers who, after so many years, no longer can work in the trade because they, even though they have protective gear when they're in the embalming room, they get sick from the fumes. It's really a heavy thing. I also think that there's so many pesticides in just the lawn chemicals mm-hmm. that are there that are being used to preserve the cemeteries, that a lot of the cemetery workers that are spraying these on the grass to keep it that pristine green color, a lot of them are getting quite sick.
All right, we'll talk about what it'll take to make a funeral green when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Elizabeth Fournier, the Green Reaper, in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about what happens after we die today, and not in the metaphysical sense, but what happens to our bodies. Have you ever considered an environmentally sound funeral? Because that is the business Elizabeth Fournier is in. She calls herself the Green Reaper. She operates the Cornerstone Funeral Services in Boring, Oregon. That is the name of the town. And Elizabeth has a second book out now called The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. So some lighthearted, freewheeling talk about what we do with our remains after we have ceased to have need for them. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we described a modern funeral, Elizabeth. Let's get into the basics. What makes a green funeral green?
A green funeral is really just, there's just a real basic definition about it, and it just means that we are not going to use embalming fluid, we're not going to be in a non-biodegradable casket, and we're not going to use a burial vault. That means there's probably still going to be a vehicle run with gas or diesel to get you to the cemetery space. People probably still will be wearing leather shoes. So, you know, the concept of being 100% green, probably not a complete reality. But that's what we're looking at doing, and we're looking at putting your body into a space where you can touch the ground. So ultimately, like Jewish families and Muslim families have been doing for many, many years, you're not having a barrier around you of a casket that's not going to biodegrade or a vault. You're just merely being placed into the ground, and a lot of people are doing this nowadays with a shroud because that's really the least expensive way to do it, just to take a natural piece of material, something that's wool or linen or silk, and wrapping that around you and placing you directly into the ground, either in a traditional cemetery, which now says, hey, great, all these spaces can be green. You'd be surprised to find out so many modern cemeteries are opening their doors saying, yeah, okay, fine, you can be here. Other cemeteries are putting maybe an acre aside and having just green burials, maybe in a space that wasn't developed, and they're thinking, okay, this is sort of natural over here. Now, what happens also when you get put into the space, they're not going to mow it. There's not going to be anything planted there. They're going to keep it really the natural grasses and just kind of give it that back to nature sort of look.
All right. So everything is all about no particular maintenance up front and none on the back end either.
Yeah, and saving money. The big thing about this is we really want to save the environment. We also want to save the money, the green, and the wallets. That's really something people want to save quite a bit as well.
So, Elizabeth, as you point out in the book, though, it's not like we didn't do these things. This is less discovery than a return to past traditions.
Yes, absolutely. That's a wonderful point to point out, that really 150 years ago, most burials were really green in nature. You know, we had a heck of a lot more deaths. We had accidents. We had less advanced health care. And really, when this would happen, a member of the family would take all the modest steps to bathe, to prepare, to place the body into a simple wood box. They would have that box made by a local craftsman or maybe even the neighbor. They would have their loved one home in their front parlor for a long time to visit. And then the front parlor would have that, of course, large door out the side. We would take that person to the backyard or the family farm or the town or church cemetery and go ahead and just have some words and have some moments of silence, place them in the ground, and then go on with our lives. So this has been happening for many, many, many years. But the big thing that happened to change all this was the Civil War.
Really? How did the war change things?
The Civil War changed because that really scattered across many states. And a lot of boys died. And I should say men, just to honor them. A lot of men died. And a lot of these families said, hey, we want to see our sons. We want these men to make their way back. So something had to be done to get these people onto trains, to get them transported back to their homes. So that was the advent of embalming. Some doctors came along and said, well, we need to preserve these. What are we going to do? So actually, the very first embalming was President Lincoln. He died at the end of the Civil War in 1865, and people revered and loved that president. He was going to be on a funeral train, be driven all across the place, being taken off in cortege and having his body seen in state in different places, and he really needed to be preserved. So that's where embalming came. So with embalming came education. With education, and men, of course, were going to go on and get degrees and study and go to school. They became the first morticians. They opened up funeral homes. And now that they had funeral parlors, they took the bodies, really, out of your home parlor. They said, oh, let me help you with that. Don't worry about that. You don't need to do that. When someone dies, you just call us, and we'll just take out the middleman, and we'll now become the parlor. So then with funeral parlors became the cemetery business, and here we are.
We are talking to Elizabeth Fournier, who calls herself the Green Reaper, about green burials. Her latest book is called The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. And we have a question here from Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I'm wondering, first of all, are you familiar with water cremation?
Yes. I'm really glad that you asked that question. Yes, I am. And is there something specific you wanted to know about it?
Yeah. I guess I was wanting to tag on to that, whether or not I don't know anything about, about mortician services and stuff, funeral services, but I've heard so many times that it's just outrageously expensive. And I'm wondering if water cremation is any less expensive, and how you would ever find, if you were going to go that route, either water or traditional, how you find people who aren't charging you out the wazoo for
it. Thanks for that, Peter. Appreciate it, Elizabeth. So water cremation first, and then cost second.
Yeah, lots to unearth here. So definitely happy to help you with that, Peter. Great question. Water cremation is a form of disposition, meaning it's a way that we can put somebody to rest or bury their remains, and this is legal in about 13 states right now in the United States. Oregon, luckily, is one of them. There's two machines that operate. One is in Roseburg, one is in Portland, and you can ask your local funeral home or whomever to help you with that. Both of these machines are machines that they are services that they contract through funeral homes. But just to let you know what this is cremation is a high heat with a flame. And we're finding out that regular cremation is a little bit toxic and not the best thing. You are using a lot of gas, a lot of fuel, a lot of the amalgamates and part of the body, maybe the pacemaker not being found, things radioactive are going out into the universe. It rains, all of that trickles down to the ground, the chickens eat that, the fish eat that, we eat them, bad, bad, bad cycle. So water cremation has come up now. There's several names for water cremation. One hasn't been settled on yet. There's biocremation, aqua cremation, alkaline hydrolysis. There's just so many of them, but the method is still the same. You're in sort of a stainless steel tube. Water is slowly washing over you like a warm bath, and you're using potassium chloride. So we're trying to make this natural. Ultimately, rather than being burned with the flame, you're just sort of being washed away, and something you can do. Right now, that method is a little bit more costly than standard cremation just because it's new. Just like when computers showed up, and a computer would take up a whole room back in the day. Well, now a computer is held in everybody's hand on their smartphone, so technology changes, it's more accessible, and rates can go down because it's not as competitive, and plus we realize more people can manufacture these ideas. So hopefully that answers your question, Peter. If not, you can always find me on my website, cornerstonefuneral.com. Give me a call. Happy to help you any way I can.
The method, you mentioned alkaline hydrolysis, which appears to be one of the major forms of water cremation. What are there any leftover chemicals from that?
There really isn't. They say that you can actually drink the water. Wow. After somebody has been put in that water bath, you actually can drink the water. I don't know anybody who's tested this out. But that's been something that's been said. We have somebody locally here in Portland who does this process, and any water left over, he has a contract with pig farmers, and he gives it to them, and it waters their area. So not for them to drink, but it actually goes to their farm. So it's all being recycled, repurposed. It's all very sustainable.
I noticed, too, that California joined the list of states. Last October, Jerry Brown signed the law that will allow alkaline hydrolysis in California as well.
That's wonderful, yeah.
So a list of states that now totals, I think, 14 or 15. Mm-hmm. The other part of Peter's question was about cost, though. And when you're talking about green funerals, is there additional sets of charges, or is it somewhat cheaper than a traditional funeral?
Yeah, green burial for cost is all across the board. When I advocate for people, I always say, let's do this cost effectively. If you have the luxury of having an acre of land in a rural part of a county and your county says, yes, this is something you can do, then by all means, you're saving so much money. You're not buying a plot. You're not having to deal with any of the extra fees of the cemetery. You probably are just using your backhoe or your neighbor's backhoe, and isn't that fantastic? All you're doing at that point is just getting your loved one either from the house or the hospital out to the backyard, and that saves lots of money. If you decide you want to be buried in a cemetery which is already established, but they're allowing for green burial spaces, they have the right to assign the grave cost for whatever they want it to be. You still have to pay for their fees for that, the fees to open and close the gravesite. And, you know, you can be buried in the sheet from your bed, or you can buy a very elaborate, very expensive silk shroud. I mean, you really can be as modest or as elaborate as you want to be. Green burial very much can be cost effective and very affordable if you take a look at your options and choose those.
Our guest is Elizabeth Fournier on the Jefferson Exchange. She calls herself the Green Reaper because she is very much dialed into the idea of green funerals and has written another book called The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. You can join us with your questions and comments on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. And Anne in Grants Pass sent an email. She says, back in the 90s, my best friend died, and I and her family knew she wanted to be as green as possible. We went to look at caskets, and they started with the top of the line, which was not green. Then we asked for the cheapest. It was a nice-looking cardboard casket. Perfect, we thought. Then at her funeral, we were shocked that this biodegradable casket was lowered into a concrete box. It was Florida, and that's how they did their cemeteries. That from Anne and Grants Pass. So I'm glad she focused on that, because I thought I was being weird focusing on the burial vaults or grave liners. I guess I didn't know they existed until now.
Well, they've been around for many years. Back in the 1950s, we really loved the idea of memorial parks. We no longer had those upright markers that were sinking into the ground. All of a sudden, markers sort of became flush to the ground. The grass became very green. Cemeteries were becoming a desirable place to walk, to picnic, to go visit your loved ones. And while you're there, hey, why not buy another grave space? Because it looked like such a palatable place to go. But to keep it like that, we had to use burial liners inside. This way, after the burial has taken place, after the soil has been put back and the sod is back in place, it settles, but it's not going to settle very low, because we have the casket, which is probably not going to biodegrade, as well as we have that concrete burial liner around it, and that's all supporting the earth. So that's why we have really smooth, smooth memorial parks. If you go in some of these older cemeteries that have been around for quite a while, if you have a local historic or pioneer cemetery, you'll sort of be careful walking on the ground, just because places sink and dip, and that's because there are not burial liners.
Ah, okay, so things get a little lumpy over time as the stuff settles in.
Yeah, and it also depends on what type of soil. If you're dealing with soil, clay, if we have, a lot of other things, the tree roots are a big deal. How's your erosion? Are you on a watershed or are you on a slope? Does nature sort of does whatever nature wants to do?
So aside from the laws of nature, let's talk about the laws of humans. And I wonder how quickly laws and regulations are keeping up with the desires of people to have green funerals. I mean, it sounds like Oregon is pretty much out in front. California seems to be doing pretty well in allowing green funerals as well. But are there still some states and areas that are real holdouts in allowing things to be done in a more biodegradable way?
There is. If you look at the cremation rates on the West Coast, we're nudging upper 70s. We are the front runners as far as cremation. And why that is because of who we are as a people. I mean, Oregon and Washington, even California, I mean, when it comes to the environment, I mean, we in our own unique ways love to recycle. We love to grow our own veggies, clean our beloved hiking trails, and we ultimately think of ourselves as wanting to be environmental. So most people thought cremation was a really good environmental choice, just because it was going to be a small little bit of human remains, and rather than taking up a whole cemetery spot, I'm just going to take up a little bit or I'm going to be scattered. Of course, over time, we're finding out that's not the most environmental. So baby boomers or environmentalists or eco-conscious people who wanted to go with cremation are now starting to move towards the green idea. So we have a lot of that out here. But if you look at other states, such as the East Coast, a lot of people have family plots. People migrated from the East Coast to the West. So the East has family plots. They have churches that are established that they probably still go to as a family. Also going through the South, that the funeral tradition and the burial tradition is very strong. And as people migrate west, and if you look at that migration going west, the Rockies onto here, a lot of people not only don't have a church, a lot of people don't have family. They just sort of came out here themselves. So that kind of goes the byway of having the family plot or the family cemetery. And we're really starting to be very independent thinkers and very much do things our own way.
So all right. So the laws are catching up in some places, and you did mention Muslims and Jews are generally okay with the green burial practices. And what about are there religious obstacles in some other cases though?
Well, I know the Catholic Church is a big fan of green burial. Ever since Pope Francis came around and talked about how he believes in being economical and environmental, and he loves the concept of ashes to ashes and dust to dust, that's really been embraced. A lot of Catholic cemeteries are now having green burial spaces, so it's definitely not a problem for that church. Some religions do things a certain way. They do have a body in a casket. They do have it in a vestibule. It's sort of how they do that. I know LDS Church, sort of that's kind of their way of what they do. I deal a lot with the African-American community, and a lot of Baptist families really want to have the home going. They want to have their loved one in the casket for the visitation. They do prefer burial. So it just sort of depends on how you're looking at it and how you're framing your thinking that way. But if you take a look across the United States, there are more than 150 green burial grounds. I mean, it's miraculous to think of a state. Pick a state you wouldn't think of. New York, you know, there's a few in there. There's places all over that there's eco-conscious people who are opening up land to allow you to be buried natural. It's really impressive and it's really amazing, and there's resources you can look at for that. One is on my website. I have a list of all the burial grounds in the United States and Canada that are green, and I think it would actually blow your mind if you had no idea about this topic.
You mentioned some of the problems, particularly with energy use in standard cremation. There is the option in very few places, it sounds like, for a funeral pyre style cremation. Is that just generally still hard to get around to?
I'm so glad you asked that, because people do ask about the Viking funeral and say, well, I live on a lake, why can't I make a vessel and do my thing? And, well, that's a great question. It's always good to ask the questions, because sometimes you'd be surprised by the answers, because you can do things. However, how we do this in the States is the only open-air pyre is in Crestone, Colorado, and it is at a place of such a high elevation that they really allow one open-air cremation a month, and they've now closed it down to you need to be a local person. They were getting a lot of outside interest, but yes, you got to be from Colorado.
All right. I did check, by the way, the California water cremation doesn't take effect until 2020, so a little time left before that happens there. The Green Burial Guidebook in front of us, Elizabeth Fournier, our guest. We'll come back and talk more about green burials with her in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley, and we're talking about the final part of your life, what happens to your body after you're gone. If you're big on reduce, reuse, recycle, you may want to take up some of the practices we're talking about in this hour, which is about recycling your body when you're done. Elizabeth Fournier is a funeral director in Boring, Oregon. That is the name of the town. And she's written another book called The Green Burial Guidebook, Everything You Need to Plan an Affordable, Environmentally Friendly Burial. You can join the conversation on the exchange. We don't like to talk about death, but she certainly makes it easy. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. I should point out there are some sidebars in the book, some fun ones at that, called Tales from the Grave. And you tell us about things like the hanging coffins of the Philippines. What's up there?
Well, different countries and different cultures honor death different ways. In the Philippines, there's a wonderful wall, and over time, this is, no new caskets have come, so I probably should throw that out there in case somebody's starting to think, hey, that's what I want to do. Back in the day, somebody would make a casket. Your loved one would put you inside this casket. They would haul you up this wall, and there is a sheer face of a wall of caskets. And it's an idea of sort of ascending onto heaven. It's also space conservation. I mean, if you think about someplace like Tokyo, we build up. It's sort of what we do. And so anyways, in the Philippines, it's neat. If you can take a look for just hanging caskets in the Philippines. Google the image. It's really quite lovely.
Well, the line five is ringing, by the way, and so I need to let Waleen know. So while we're talking about different ways to do things with the body after death, where it sounds like we're adding to the tradition with things like upright burial.
Right. In Australia, we have upright burial, and that's a really interesting concept. A hole is dug with an auger. It's sort of a 2x2 space. You're put in feet first in sort of a burlap shroud. And think about the space conservation. That's pretty amazing. That would almost be like having spaces for a cremated urn just because of the depth going down. And some people say they like that idea because it might be a faster acceleration to heaven, you know, feet first. But nonetheless, that's a really interesting idea. That's still, again, not here in the U.S. There's a lot of really interesting concepts that aren't here. In Sweden, there's something called Promessa, where you're put into liquid nitrogen, you're frozen, you're put on a vibrating table, you're broken into pieces, and then from there you can be planted into gardens or something, and all that wonderful nutrients of you over time is going to be out in that soil. Some people really seem to like that idea, but we just don't have that in the U.S.
What about the, you mentioned Capsula Mundi. This is really interesting, too.
Yes, Capsula Mundi, that's out of Italy. And that's the idea of being placed in a very large eco-pod, which is a tree pod. You're buried into not a burial ground, but a burial forest. And then a whole beautiful forest of trees come because of this pod. So that's something they are still working on right now. A lot of these really fantastic ideas haven't all come to fruition. A lot of them are in the works. There's something wonderful in the state of Washington called Recompose, and that's the idea of having a building, which they're trying to do in downtown Seattle, five floors. You walk up it with your loved one in burlap. You place them in this sort of incinerator, and over time, surrounded by wood chips, they just sort of biodegrade, and you can have your ceremony. And I mean, there's a lot of real think tankers out there that are trying to find any way possible to go green. And hey, did you know this, Jeffrey? Every state in the United States, you can have a burial at sea. That's absolutely green.
Burial at sea, really?
Yeah, 3 miles off the coast. Now, of course, there's some rules. You just can't take your loved one out on a boat. But if you think about that, if somebody's placed in a burlap bag or a cotton container, what have you, and they're going straight into the ocean, I mean, how much more natural can you be?
Truly, but is that good for the ocean? I mean, if it's an unembalmed body and all, I guess it's fine. But any particular concerns for, you know, what might happen to fish or anything?
Well, probably if that person ate at McDonald's every single day, that might be a problem. There'd be a lot of preservatives in that body, but we just hope that won't be the case.
All right. Let's take a call. We have Gene and Winston on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Elizabeth Fournier is the author of the Green Burial Guidebook. Hi, Gene.
Hello. Is this for me, Gene?
Yes, yes.
Yes. I was wondering what happens to somebody's gold fillings, especially if they're cremated. I have a lot of them. I'd just like to pass them on to my family instead of some funeral homes.
Oh, okay. Good question. Thanks for that, Gene.
Gene, it's a wonderful question. It's a wonderful question. I get that often, and I'm so happy to share that with your listeners. Anybody who has anything in your body, your family is more than welcome to have it. Gold teeth is one thing people ask about. There's an assumption that the funeral home is profiting off these gold teeth. In order to get the gold out of the tooth needs to be extracted from the person's mouth, and that's going to take a pair of pliers to do. I've been in this industry 28 years. I've never heard of any funeral director, mortuary person, crematory operator ever wanting to take pliers to really rip a tooth out of a person's mouth. So that really just doesn't happen. That myth doesn't happen. Also, if you want to do it, what you really need to do is get more of a forensic dentist or even a standard dentist who will help you. In my 28 years, I have never been able to find the phone number of a dentist who is willing to do this. Something about standing over a human being with a pair of pliers and yanking, then forcibly yanking this tooth out is something people don't want to do. A few family members I've offered and said, if you want to do this, you're welcome to. But again, even before the process, they chickened out. Just people just don't want to do this. But Gene, just to give you the clear picture of it, if you want to find somebody and line them up to help you with that, I would say start asking around now.
Right, and which is the big thing here. We're talking about planning in advance. And so there are lots of choices. Where should people begin? I think you mentioned they should pick the place they want to be buried if they do want to be buried first.
Yeah, I think the easiest method is to talk with your friends and family and tell them what your wishes are, because you can walk out to the corner store for your super big gulp and get hit by the city bus anytime. So I think really letting people know what your wishes are very important. Secondly, if you're very serious about a green burial, then figure out where your body is going to rest. In the United States, we have to have some piece of property and some address attached to where we're going to be. So if you have private property, again, I always advocate if you want to do this at home, you call your local county, you talk to the planning and zoning. Many counties in Oregon are open to this idea, but it shifts occasionally. It also depends on where you're zoned. There's a lot of factors in it, so it's a little bit hard to kind of give the blanket statement of all the counties. I'm in Clackamas County. I'm in rural Clackamas County, but even rural, if somebody has over 1 acre, they could have 40 acres. They could be away from a watershed. They could have all these things, but then, whoops, they're really too close to power lines, or, you know, the road goes too close. So there's always going to be something to rule things out, so always check that address. Planning ahead is a very big deal.
If you do want to be buried on private land, something has to go onto the deed, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And the one question people have the most about this is, the main objection really is, what's going to happen? What do I have to face when I sell property? And the seller really needs to sign a disclosure statement, and they really need to list to the best of their knowledge if a body has been buried on the property. And from there, if the property is sold, unless you have a specific arrangement with the new owner that you have visitation rights, which, you know, probably is not going to be part of your deal, you have to just allow your loved one to be buried on that land that now belongs to somebody else. It doesn't become a public cemetery or a private cemetery. You can't make an easement in the back gate and pop over the fence. Ultimately, you have to allow your loved one to just be a tree, to just go into the ecosystem, to become one with the biosphere, and let go of the fact that you still can go out and put flowers out there on a daily basis.
There is, I haven't pointed out yet, a whole do-it-yourself category in here. I mean, can the family handle all the details?
In the states of Washington and the states of Oregon, you can 100% act as your own funeral director. And what that means is, you do not have to hire a funeral home for anything. There are some steps you need to follow, such as there needs to be a death certificate typed up, which is going to need to be sent out, or handwritten, I should say, too. They prefer typed. Not many people have a typewriter nowadays. So you're going to need to fill out a death certificate, get it to the county where the person died. You're also going to have the medical provider, a nurse practitioner, a doctor, hospice doctor, whomever, sign off on that certificate with the causes of death and the fact that this was an expected death. If not, medical examiner signs off on that piece of paper. And then on a permit, which is going to be the piece of paper that's included with that, of, are you going to bury this person or are you going to cremate this person, that needs to get off to the right entity. So that's an important thing. We also need to take care of the body properly. So there's some steps, but it's nothing that's horribly daunting. It's nothing that you can't do if you put a team together of people who are willing to step in and help. You can provide your own transportation. There's so many things you can do. And the nice part of this is, for some reason, you just get hung up on any problem. You can always call a local funeral home to step in and help.
I noticed that transportation of a body seems to be a deal, particularly in California, where you got to get a permit for disposition to be able to transport a body. Is that something that tends to be an obstacle?
Well, if somebody passes away, even in a hospital or a home, and you're going to bring them to a cemetery, you can pretty much get the paperwork you need, put them in your station wagon or in your van, and transport them to the cemetery. So it's not so much the legality of it, it's really the physicality of it. You have to have the vehicle that you can use. You have to have the people who can lift this loved one, place them in. You really need to have some sort of a rigid board underneath them to move them, or some sort of a shroud with straps to move them. And it's really heavy to carry somebody. And it's also just strange if you love that person and there they are in the back of your car. Some people just mentally can't handle that. So That's a lot of these things. There's the legality and the physicality of death, but the one thing I think is the most important is, we're really heart-centered people, and it's really about what's going to help you get through this process.
So if you decide to go the whole do-it-yourself route, you want to prepare the body at home, and as you mentioned, if it's, under 48 hours, you don't need refrigeration, or is it 24?
Well, the 24 rule is a funeral home rule. If a funeral home is bringing a body into their care, within 24 hours, they need to bury, they need to embalm, they need to cremate, or they need to refrigerate. If you are going to take care of your own loved one, then you have more rights than a funeral home. You can keep your loved one at home after the 24-hour period is fine. We do recommend you think about cooling the room, and if that's going to be air conditioning, if that's going to be dry ice, if that's going to be ice packs, whatever that's going to be. Also, transporting in a car, the same thing. You can have the air conditioning on. You can have some sort of cooling method going. There's several. There's cooling blankets. There's lots of techniques, and a lot of those are mentioned in the book because, again, this is so brand new for so many people.
What about handling and washing the body? Are there any concerns there about, particularly if the person, I don't know, as it was said in the Christmas Carol, if they, you know, died of something catching?
You know, pandemics don't happen so often in the United States anymore, but there are people occasionally that have tuberculosis, or they have Creutzfeldt. And there are different issues out there that could possibly be a problem. We don't have the AIDS, HIV as much as we used to in the 80s. But if you are handling a loved one that you believe might have some bloodborne pathogens, might have SARS, might have some issue, then sure, it's always smart to cover your hands with some sort of gloves, maybe cover your face with something, and really just use a lot of precautions. Normally, if your loved one is going to be having a lot of these issues, they're going to be in a hospital, they're probably going to die in a hospital. The hospitals, they take all those practicalities and steps, and by the time your loved one is deceased, they're already sort of in a protective bag. Things have already moved on from there. But again, you know, you have the right to be with your loved one as much as you need and do as much as you need for them.
Elizabeth, before we go, you mentioned how driven you were to get into the job of funeral director from childhood because of family circumstances. Have green funerals opened up a whole new realm for you?
It has. It has made this life and world so beautiful. Being the undertaker of Boring Oregon, I laugh every time I say it because it's funny. It's okay. It's just been, I work in a repurposed goat barn in the country, and I have to say, I am, as Oprah would say, I am living my true life, and I am extremely happy and so thankful to be here.
Elizabeth Fournier calls herself the Green Reaper. She is the author of the Green Burial Guidebook, everything you need to plan an affordable, environmentally friendly burial. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take care.